You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today is Professor Frank Askin from Rutgers University in New Jersey. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I just had the biggest thrill of my life because I got to come up and I got to meet you last month.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to meet you.
It was a lot of fun.
Hello.
Anyway, Professor Askin is the professor of law at Rutgers. He's been there for a long time. He's a member of the ACLU. He is the author of Defending Rights, A Life in Law and Politics. He has done a whole lot for helping homeowners and the citizens of New Jersey protect their rights. And for that, I thank you. I think you've probably done more than a lot of people towards protecting rights. And you're a member of the ACLU?
Well, I've been on the national board for almost 40 years.
Almost 40 years?
That is correct.
That is a long time.
Yes, it is.
And you also started the Rutgers, the law clinic.
Yeah, the Constitutional Litigation Clinic. Started that in 1970.
And you still are the director?
That is correct.
And
my students and I practice public interest law.
And basically you have your students working with you on that.
That is correct.
And you've been working recently with, I mean, you've litigated, and I guess it's your students who've litigated the Twin River case?
That's right. We filed that lawsuit in 2000.
And it's still going on, huh?
Well, I'm expecting a decision from the New Jersey Supreme Court, hopefully within the next week.
Within the next week?
I would anticipate that. The Chief Justice retires on June 17th, and while he could still participate in an opinion after he's retired, my guess is that they'll try to decide the case by his retirement date.
Now, that the arguments actually were posted on the website.
Yeah, the argument was in January 4th.
January 4th, and I watched that. And I have to tell you, I mean, I know that I'm biased, but I have to tell you, Frank, I thought that of all of the three attorneys who spoke, you were by far the most credible, the best prepared, and the only one who made any sense there.
Well, I would agree with you, but I'm a little biased.
That'll make two of us. No, but seriously, the justices seem to be, in my opinion, and I'm not an attorney, but in my opinion, the justices seem to be spoon-feeding the information or the arguments to your opposition.
Seem to be what about the arguments to my opposition?
Spoon-feeding them, you know, trying to...
Well, one was. Yeah, I had a very hostile justice, Rivera Soto. He's a very conservative justice, and he was very partisan. So he was clearly on the side of the defendants.
So you think this is going to be a split decision when it comes
down? Well, it's, the best I will do is win 6-1 at the best. I know he will be against me. I hope I have at least 4 of the 7 votes.
So it's going to have to be a majority. You don't have
I need 4 votes.
You need 4 votes.
Yeah, because, and we won below. So I need 4 votes to affirm the decision of the appellate division.
I mean, you know the composition of the court, and you know the judges, and I think you're fairly comfortable, both you and Evan McKenzie, you're both very comfortable that you think you will win.
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic. Let's put it that way.
I'm optimistic, too, and I'm just waiting so that we can celebrate right here on the Commons.
I hope so.
The conference, Frank, I want to talk just a little bit about the conference.
Right, yeah, it was quite an event, our conference.
It was fabulous.
Yeah.
What part, I mean, Rutgers University took part in it.
Yeah, well, we had the official endorsement of all 3 of the law schools in New Jersey, Rutgers, Newark, Rutgers, Camden, and Seton Hall Law School. But the actual funding came from a grant from the Lois and Sam Pratt Foundation. And they were actually the founders of the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition in New Jersey. And when they both died not too far apart, they left their money to this foundation to promote the interests of homeowners and communities and to promote open governance.
I knew, I mean, I never met Lois and Sam, but I talked to them quite often, and in fact, they were on the show, a previous show that I did, not this one, and they were really marvelous people. So they, it was their money, basically, that funded this conference?
Yes, their money funded the conference.
And was this something that they had intended to do when they were alive, or?
I suppose that's what they decided to leave their money for. They actually gave it to Rutgers Law School, but for the purpose of, promoting open government and the rights of members of community associations.
And promoting it in what way? I mean, obviously the conference was wonderful. It was probably the only thing in New Jersey or on the East Coast that was handled by, you know, by the homeowners or by the private sector, if you will, for the homeowners, as opposed to having industry involved.
Right.
Was it very difficult to do?
Well, yeah, the conference, well, you know, a lot of work went into it. The leaders of the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition were very, very helpful. We also had the endorsements of the AARP, the ACLU, the League of Women Voters, New Jersey Appleseed Foundation, and they all sent out mailings. And so we had a good bit of support. And we had, about 350 people there at the New Jersey State Museum. So that was, I think a very fine turnout. And we had, I think a very interesting program.
I thought it was very interesting. There was one, you haven't gotten a whole lot of really good press on it, though.
Not a whole lot. I'd have liked to have had more press, that's for sure.
Well, I had heard before I came up because I was there. But I'd heard before that they were going to bus in all these seniors, and I had this image of millions of irate old people sitting, on walkers and things. But there weren't that many of them there. There were a few. They were spewing out the CAI rhetoric that CAI comes up with all the time. I mean, obviously, none of this was...
Well, there was a group that came in from, was bussed in by a place called Manchester Township, where they have a number of adult communities. And actually, they were not so much supporting CAI as they don't want any regulation. These people were all agitated that it was going to cost them money.
Right.
They didn't want to have to pay an assessment for some kind of government oversight. And some people had, agitated them and got them all worked up. There was going to be a new tax on them. So there were about, there were probably 75 people there who came with that purpose. They didn't want any regulation at all. So they were not even for the CAI bill. CAI is sponsoring its own bill. The homeowners, like the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition, are supporting an alternative bill, which is really a homeowners' bill of rights. They are both sort of tied up in the legislature. Nothing is moving at the moment. But this particular group, they don't want any legislation at all.
Now, when I said they're spewing the CAI rhetoric, I know one of them stood up and said that CAI conducted this poll and 90% of all homeowners were very happy, and therefore you did not need to have any kind of legislation.
Right.
That is the CAI response to everything. Oh, well, we did the Zogby poll and everybody's happy.
That's certainly true. But they also, CAI is also supporting this UCOA bill, though.
Well, they wrote it.
Yeah, right.
They wrote it. That's why they want it. It's funny. They want the UCOA out all over the country. They want every state to adopt it.
Right.
However, they don't want any kind of homeowner-friendly legislation because their argument is that what you're doing is one bill fits all type of thing. You can't have that. And when you point out that, wait a minute, you want the entire country using the UCOA, then it's a different story. They don't really have an answer for that.
Right.
No, but when I said CIA, so obviously this is, you know, the information was given to them by CAI. CAI has scared them. It's not the first time it's been done. I mean, they do it routinely. But despite that, Frank, the overwhelming, I mean, despite the fact that they bust the seniors in and you had them, the actual testimony against any interference, the actual testimony that the seniors gave was a very small portion of the entire program.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they got all the press.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that is.
I'm sorry, who got all the press?
The seniors did.
You mean those who didn't want out regulation?
Yeah, the seniors.
No, I don't think that's true. They got one. No, there was one local newspaper from Manchester Township, which ran an article about their particular group. But that's a very small weekly newspaper. There was actually a press. The Gannett newspapers did some stories. We had a number of Gannett newspapers in New Jersey, and they did a pretty good report, I thought, on the conference.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah. Gannett did a good stories.
Oh, okay.
And, the New Jersey radio station, 101.5, which is New Jersey's main, you know, local news station, they had pretty good reports.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I'd seen the Manchester one and I'd seen another one, and they seemed to focus primarily on the seniors who were there who don't want any kind of legislation at all.
Yeah, that was something that was written by that particular group and put in their local weekly newspaper. It was not of much consequence.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because, you know, here on the Commons, we'll give you all the press and all the airtime that you want to get the information out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is, I asked Margaret was on last week, and I asked her if this was going to become an annual thing, an annual conference.
Oh, that I can't say. I don't know. You know, this is a lot of work went into this, and it came out pretty well. But, you know, we're going to have to take it one month at a time. We'll see where the legislation goes.
One at a time, huh?
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens with the legislative process and whether anything moves. You know, New Jersey is now so tied up with trying to pass a budget and all of its fiscal problems that nothing else much is happening in the legislature at the moment. And, you know, that was complicated by Governor Corzine's automobile accident, from which he is still recovering.
So you don't think anything's going to happen this year? How late does your legislative session go?
Well, it's actually supposed to end in the end of June when they adopt the budget, and then it's unclear whether there will be another session before the elections in November.
Wow. You had two of the legislators who were there.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we had two members of the state Senate.
And they came in and gave a quick brief, and they had to run.
Yeah, the legislature was in session. They couldn't stay very long. But they're both very supportive of the homeowners' rights bill.
So you do have friends in the legislature?
Oh, yeah, there are some. There are some. Unfortunately, not enough at the moment.
Well,
unfortunately, you know, the CAI has, you know, most of the clout, because they have a PAC and they give money to the legislators.
Oh, I know that. I know that. But one thing, and I don't mean to skip back and forth, but jumping back to Twin Rivers, you had quite a number of amicus briefs filed on behalf of the Twin River homeowners.
We had two briefs filed, yeah.
The AARP and...
And the New Jersey Public Advocate.
And the... Typically, it's very hard for a homeowner to find anyone who would file an amicus.
Uh-huh.
So you did very well on that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to dispel right now, while we're here on the air, do you want to dispel the myth about why AARP was involved?
Well, AARP was involved because they're concerned about, you know, the hundreds of thousands of older Americans who live in these adult communities and the rights of people living in these communities. They've had, you know, a longstanding study about governance in adult communities, and they've been trying to come up with, you know, some definitive policy. They now have some proposed policies. They don't have definitive policy yet, but they did thought that, that you know, they did think that the Twin Rivers case was one in which, since it would be a, you know, could be a landmark for the nation, they thought it would be important for them to participate.
Explain how that could be a landmark, because
the appellate, the New Jersey Appellate Division opinion, which we're hoping the state Supreme Court will uphold, is the first one in the country to hold that these associations are quasi-governmental bodies, what we call constitutional actors, and that they are bound to respect certain rights under the state constitution. Remember, under the federal constitution, as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court, these community associations are private entities. They are not state actors. They're not governmental actors. And therefore, there are no constitutional restrictions on the way they are governed. Our argument is that in New Jersey, the New Jersey constitution reaches these kinds of quasi-governmental entities. And at least the free speech provisions of the New Jersey Constitution are applicable to them. Now, that's what the appellate division ruled, and that's what I'm hoping the New Jersey Supreme Court will affirm. And if it does, you know, it will, for the first time, create some precedent that, you know, other state Supreme Courts can look to in interpreting their own state constitutions. That's why I'm saying this could be a landmark case in the country.
Because the last time you were on, I asked you why you weren't arguing it at the federal level, and then you'd take care of all of us at the same time, and you didn't think you'd be able to do that somehow.
No, you can't win this in the U.S. Supreme Court until there's a major change in the personnel of the U.S. Supreme Court.
How important is public opinion in this? Is there any importance there?
Well, that's not an easy question. Public opinion, it certainly is important to legislative action. If you want the legislatures to take some action, public opinion is extremely important. How it affects judicial opinions, it's not easy to say. Some, you know, courts are, you know, the members of the judges are also members of the public. They have the same concerns that other members of the public have. And so as these kinds of issues become public issues and become debated in the public press, I think it has some impact on the thinking of members of the judiciary. I mean, I think it's important that, for example, that in New Jersey, the leading newspapers in New Jersey, the New York Star Ledger, the Record of in Bergen County, have both endorsed protections for homeowners. They've endorsed legislation like Homeowners Bill of Rights. They have applauded the decision of the appellate division in New Jersey in the Twin Rivers case. So that's an aspect of, knowledgeable public opinion trying to influence the development of public policy. And it's not unimportant. How influential it will be, it's hard to say.
I guess if you, sir, were to take the constitutional protection to contract and say, well, look, you know, you have the right to contract, and it's a constitutionally protected right.
Can you speak up a little?
I'm sorry. I said if you take the constitutionally protected right to contract, and this is one of the arguments that the other side makes quite often, you know, you're interfering with contract.
These are not contracts. These are contracts, we'll call contracts of adhesion.
Right.
People don't have any, there's no bargaining here. I mean, as I told the New Jersey Supreme Court, if somebody was buying a home and said, well, I'll give you an extra $500 if I can put a political sign on my lawn, they'd be laughed at. There's nothing to bargain over. These are no contracts. These are take-it-or-leave-it propositions. And such contracts have never really been, you know, recognized in New Jersey as binding, these kinds of one-sided contracts. Some states give them a little bit more protection, but New Jersey, I don't think that's a major issue in New Jersey. New Jersey Supreme Court has always looked very skeptically at these kinds of enforced provisions where one side, you know, says take it or leave it. New Jersey does not usually consider them contracts, particularly when it involves constitutional rights, where people are being forced to waive their constitutional rights in order to do something.
Well, you've answered my question before I even asked it. Mm-hmm. Where I was going was, would the justices sort of, if the homeowner said, wait a minute, we didn't get a choice, or we never really sat down and negotiated this at arm's length in order to have a valid contract, and now you're telling me it's a contract, whether the justices would even look at that and take that argument. But you're saying they don't even give it much weight. So
I don't think so. I don't think they'll pay any attention.
So that's really good to know. Mm-hmm. Because that's good to know. We're going to be taking a break in a couple of minutes, but before we do, we did get one question from Don, who said he would be interested in hearing Mr. Askin's recommendations regarding legislative versus judicial approaches to guaranteeing the rights of owners and members. What are his recommendations for statutory language? Do you want to field that?
Well, you know, that's very complicated. You know, writing statutes is a complicated process. What we need are statutes that say people have rights, that there's a right of freedom of speech. Let me step back a second. You know, even if we win this case in the New Jersey Supreme Court, that's not going to be self-enforcing. Somebody's going to have to go out and enforce those rights. And that's not so easy, because to enforce rights in court, you have to sue. You have to hire a lawyer. I can't represent a million homeowners in New Jersey. I mean, I'm the one lawyer, pro bono lawyer in New Jersey, who sometimes, occasionally, can take provide free legal representation. But just because we get a favorable court ruling, somebody's got to enforce that. And it just doesn't happen automatically. Frankly, even if we get a favorable ruling from the state Supreme Court in Twin Rivers, I would still like the state legislature to provide some resources to let homeowners enforce whatever rights the court gives them, or to even provide more rights through the legislature itself. And the way to do that is probably by providing some resources to New Jersey's public advocate to enforce these kinds of provisions. The New Jersey public advocate did file an amicus brief in our case. They certainly are supportive of the rights of homeowners, but they would need resources to enforce. For example, I think we need some kind of ombudsperson in the New Jersey Public Advocate's Office, where people who have disputes with their associations can go to and seek some support. We need some oversight for elections to make sure that elections in these associations are free and fair and open. But that takes somebody to supervise them, and that takes a little bit of resources. So even if there are rights are meaningless unless there are some remedies to carry them out. So we do need legislation to provide remedies and resources to enforce whatever rights the homeowners may have. I mean, even now, there are certain rights under statutes in New Jersey for homeowners, for example, access to governing documents. But it's meaningless unless there's some place to go to enforce that right. Homeowners go to their association, they ask to see documents. The association says no, and there's little they can do. There's nobody they can go to. They got to go out and hire a lawyer. People don't want to go spend thousands of dollars to hire a lawyer just to get documents they have a right to see in the first place. So there's a need for enforcement of whatever rights do exist, and that's the first thing the legislation must provide.
Every state that's had it, Frank, it's been watered down, and the industry's managed to get in. Have any good ombudsman fired and replaced with one of their own puppets?
Well, Well, I'm not quite sure what's happened. I mean, we did have the Florida ombudsperson, Danielle Carroll, speak at the conference.
Right.
I don't have firsthand experience of how it's working in Florida. She seems to think that it's working reasonably well. I can't verify that.
Well, I think it had been, but they fired. And Danielle's only been there for a year. But the original one, Virgil Rizzo, I think he did a really, really good job.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Representative Julia Robina. He said we're very pleased with her. We're very happy with Danielle. She's doing a great job. I talked to some of the homeowners. They said she's just not quite aggressive enough. Not yet, but I don't think she's on. I don't think she's on anybody's side. She's kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I was very disappointed about that she did not mention, or I did not hear her mention it, is that Florida, under the same DBPR that they have, has started a new program. It's a pilot program, and it's only being done in the Miami-Dade area, and that is where they've taken law enforcement officers and trained them on how to go in and investigate allegations of, you know, of embezzlement or wrongdoing by an association. They've had their first arrest, and they actually went in and they found that some $4 million had been stolen from the homeowners. So they've had their first arrest. Two people have been arrested. They're looking for at least two more people. I think that's the program that I would like to see get a whole lot more publicity and maybe get adopted by more people because, you know, embezzlement, fraud, and all of that's really big news right now. It's been hitting the papers. But there's no one to investigate. As you mentioned a while ago, you go in and you request the documents. Mm-hmm. You don't get it.
Right.
They don't want to give it to you. So I think that what we've seen lately is just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
And I was kind of disappointed that Danielle didn't talk about that because the legislators were still there when she spoke. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a great thing for them to hear about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe the jury's still out on it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. There'll be plenty more with Professor Frank Askin, okay. So don't go away. On the Commons with us today, we have Professor Frank Askin. Frank, thank you so much for joining us. Frank, on the air, we just talked about a little bit about the conference, and we talked about Ed Hanneman. Ed Hanneman was on the program and was supposed to speak, but you want to tell us who Ed is and what happened? Frank, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You want to tell us who Ed Hanneman is and what happened at the conference?
No, I'm losing you again.
Do you want
Hello?
To... Hello?
Yes.
Do you want to tell us who Ed Hanneman is and what happened at the conference?
Well, Ed Hanneman works for the Bureau of Homeowner Protection in the New Jersey Department of Community Affairs. They're supposed to have some limited jurisdiction under the Condominium Act and the Planned Real Estate Development Act over community associations. He's a one-man band. He has done the best he could. He's the one person in the New Jersey government who I think over the past years has tried as best he could to help homeowners in New Jersey who had problems with their association, such as there wasn't a fair election, or people asked for governing documents and were refused them. And Hanneman at least would write a letter to try to help these people. Didn't have any real resources to back him up, didn't have any enforcement power, but he's tried to the best of his ability to enforce the few rights that do exist for homeowners under existing New Jersey statutes. Therefore, we invited him to speak at the conference, and he agreed to speak. Then he was told by his superiors at Department of Community Affairs that he could not speak for Department of Community Affairs. He asked if he could speak as an individual on his own. He took a vacation day that day. They said no, that they would fire him if he spoke. So he didn't speak. They asked that they wanted to send somebody else to speak for DCA. We said we didn't particularly want that person. We didn't think that person had done much to help homeowners. But if DCA wanted to send somebody to, you know, present their position, they could do so. And we gave that person, 10 minutes to speak. I didn't think he had very much worthwhile to say. But that was a story. So Ed Hanneman has basically been gagged. He's under a gag order. Exactly what's going on there, I don't know. Apparently, I think it has something. It must have something to do with CAI influence, the Department of Community Affairs. CAI doesn't like Ed Hanneman. They think he's been on the side of homeowners against the associations. And apparently CAI has a good bit of influence over that department. I think, in the course of this conference, I think we were frustrated by the fact that if Governor Corzine had been well at the time, I think we could have gotten the Corzine administration to intervene and do something to protect Ed Hanneman. But unfortunately, Governor Corzine was in the hospital after his terrible automobile accident. He was recuperating. He had a lot of, he did come back to work while going through physical therapy, had a lot of other things on his plate, and this was not a priority for him. So DCA was able to successfully gag Ed Hanneman, and that's what happened, unfortunately.
I guess Ed's not even allowed to talk to reporters.
No, I don't believe he is.
He's not allowed to testify to the legislature.
That's correct.
How can they do that, Frank?
Well, they threatened to fire him.
Yeah, but
if they did fire him, he might have a claim against them, but I'm not sure he wants to, have a lawsuit.
I was going to ask you, do you know any good lawyers?
Well, we told them if we fire him, we'd get him a lawyer, but, he'd prefer not to buy that, bag of worms.
But this is incredible. So he's probably the one person within the government who has the biggest amount of knowledge.
Right, that's absolutely true.
And he's the one person who's not allowed
about all the abuses that are going on.
And he's the one person who's not allowed to talk about
that's
it.
Right.
So there's a whole bunch of information there that's not going to see the light of day.
Now, fortunately, the head of the Department of Community Affairs has just resigned, and the governor will soon appoint a new director. Maybe that will have some change. I don't know. That might have helped change the situation.
Tell me about the public advocate.
Well, the public advocate, of course, is a wonderful institution in New Jersey that Governor Corzine has resurrected after it had been dismantled by Governor Christy Whitman for 8 years. The public advocate is a wonderful public servant. Does lots of good. Is totally independent of the rest of state government. Is even allowed to sue other departments of state government. And I would like to see under the legislation passed that put the authority in the Department of Public Advocate, not the Department of Community Affairs, to protect the rights of homeowners. I think that would be a huge step forward. And I would like to see the public advocate get that authority and get some resources to carry it out. So that's a major legislative strategy that I would like to pursue in New Jersey, to take the power out of community affairs and give it to the public advocate.
Do you think that, regardless of whatever agency within the government ends up with the power, do you think they'll actually be given teeth? Because quite often, Frank, they're not allowed to do anything.
New Jersey, the public advocate, if they had the power, could do a lot. Public advocate is a very powerful and independent force in New Jersey. See, it's unique in the United States.
Yeah, we don't have one.
No, nobody else has one. And when the public that's why the Republican administration of Christy Whitman destroyed it, abolished it. It did much good work from the time Governor Burns set it up back in the 1970s until Whitman abolished it in the 1990s. And now it's back in action and can be a great force for public good in New Jersey.
His name's Ron Chen, right?
The current public advocate is Ronald Chen, right? My former colleague at Rutgers Law School.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay. I'll have to get him on sometime.
Oh, absolutely. No, I pushed very hard for the nomination of Ron Chen as public advocate.
So he would have the power and the ability to actually do something.
Oh, absolutely.
That's good.
If he gets the legislative authority.
Oh, he hasn't got it yet?
He doesn't have it yet. He needs that authority from the legislature. I mean, he did on his own file an amicus brief for the Twin Rivers case. That was his decision.
He filed an amicus brief, and the AARP did. And I understand that the industry, CAI, is whining. They claim...
CAI whines about a lot of things when they don't get their way.
Oh, I know they do. I have a
they're
lot.
They're big whiners.
I have a lot of fun with them. Their claim was that your wife, Marilyn, was president of the AARP in New Jersey, and that is the only reason you got that amicus, and that's not the case.
No, well, it's true my wife was the president for 6 years until last year. But what happened, actually, was that I think it was Jim Dieterle, who is the executive director of AARP in New Jersey, he was aware that AARP had this big national policy review coming up on community associations. And he notified National AARP about this case going ahead in New Jersey and thought they might be interested in it. And then National AARP is, they control everything. They're totally done. And AARP is a very nationally centralized organization. States have very little autonomy. But National AARP then contacted me and began asking me about the case. And they expressed a lot of interest in the case. Even I suggested they file an amicus brief when we were still in the appellate division. They declined to do so. But then when we won in the appellate division, I sent them a copy of the appellate division opinion, and they were very excited by the appellate division opinion because it, was in line with the policy which AARP has been developing for their national policy guide. They haven't quite finished it yet, but they're in the process of developing a national policy on community associations. And this was the appellate division's opinion was consistent with the policy that AARP was developing, and then they took it under advisement at their national, levels, or however that works. And then one day they called and said, oh, yeah, we've decided we're going to file an amicus brief in your case in the state Supreme Court. So that's how it happened.
Well, it's funny because I also met Marilyn. And by the way, I think she's adorable. I just loved her. And when she found out that she was being blamed for AARP's involvement, she didn't even know about it. But that was CAI. Oh, yeah, the only reason AARP is involved is because Mrs. Askin is president of the New Jersey chapter of AARP, and that's
but,
how...
What's so funny, the defendant's lawyers in Twin Rivers complained to the press that, AARP filed the brief, but that's because Askin's wife is state president, and the public advocate filed the brief, but that's because Ron Chen is Frank Askin's former colleague. They forgot to mention that Barry Goodman, my adversary, the lawyer for the Twin Rivers Homeowners Association, my former student. So maybe there was a conflict of interest there.
Oh, dear.
Barry Goodman was a student in my clinic.
And he didn't learn anything, did he, Frank?
Well, unfortunately, he learned too much. He's a pretty good lawyer. I taught him too well.
You taught
him. But he's on the wrong side now.
He is on the wrong side.
He opted to make money. Let me say something about CAI. These people just so annoy me. They come crying. Why didn't we invite a CAI spokesperson to speak at the conference? I said, now this is what I told them. I said, look, this is a conference. The speakers are all nonpartisan, neutral, public interest advocates. They have no access to grind. You're hired guns. The CAI people are all hired guns. You get paid to advocate positions, and you advocate the positions you're paid for. The people at this conference have no access to grind. They are nonpartisan. Nobody pays them to say what they believe. They say what they believe because they believe it's in the public interest and they want to serve the public interest. And furthermore, I said, when you invite me to go along to meet with legislators when you go hand them a $5,000 check from CAI PAC to talk to them about legislation. When you invite me on that delegation to speak to the legislators, I'll invite you to a conference which is being sponsored by Lois and Sam Pratt's money. That's what I told them.
And what did they say?
Well, they mumble and grumble. Unfair. We don't get a chance. One-sided.
But you know what? They really are paying attention to everything that we're doing.
Good.
You had...
I hope they're running scared.
We've been telling them that the pendulum is swinging the other way. They'd better get out of the way, otherwise they're going to get smacked.
Hope so.
But the president of CAI, Ron Perl, was there at the conference. He was standing in the back.
Yep.
They do. They monitor everything. All the advocates, all the activists. They know what's going on. So I think they are running a little scared. So whatever you guys are doing, keep doing it. Keep the pressure up, guys. It's your home.
Do the best I can.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of fun. You wrote a book, Defining Rights, A Life in Law and Politics.
Yeah, Defending Rights, A Life in Law and Politics.
Want to tell us a little bit about it?
Huh?
You want to tell us a little bit about the book?
Well, the book is, it's actually 10 years old now. I wrote it it came out in 97, published by Humanities Press, now distributed by Prometheus Books. And it really is in two sections. It's half of it is about the work I've done in the courts, my litigation, basically as a civil liberties lawyer and working with the ACLU, major cases I've handled. And the other half is about my life in the political arena, which has also been an important part of my life. I have served as special counsel to three congressional committees at various times. I've run for Congress twice myself.
Successfully?
Never successfully, no.
No?
No. It was quite interesting, experiences. So I've spent a lot of time, my life is an open book, and I'm a public person. I enjoy advocating for public issues, for public policy. That's what I do. I try to change policy and change the law in ways that I think will make this a better nation and a better world.
So when the Twin River case is out, I mean, that's it. At this point, it's over with. Whatever the Supreme Court decision is, stands, right?
That's correct.
So when you win, and I know you will, is there going to be another book?
Probably. I've been working on a sequel. It's cases. It's mostly cases that I've worked on since this book, first book, came out. So there'll be new issues to discuss. Although, to tell you the truth, so much of what I do, everything old is new again. The same issues keep coming back all the time.
But well, you did the free speech in the Gutenberg.
Yes, right. Well, that was the first of the community association cases I handled. But that was actually an outgrowth of our shopping mall cases. My clinic, we did the cases that the Supreme Court ruled that the New Jersey shopping malls were public forums where people could gather petitions and collect petitions and distribute literature. Then we did the Galaxy Towers Gutenberg case, which had to do with the right of third parties to come into a high-rise condominium and to reply to the political disseminations of the condominium association, and that we won that in New Jersey, and that led us into the Twin Rivers case. And if we win Twin Rivers, then there are a lot of other community association cases that are sort of on hold, which I hope we'll be able to settle if we win the Twin Rivers case. But there's always new issues coming up, floating around. In recent years, I've spent most of my time litigating under the New Jersey Constitution in the New Jersey courts, frankly. After the first 20 years of my litigation activities in the federal courts under the federal Constitution, but the federal courts became so conservative and reactionary that I finally abandoned the federal courts and found a much more compatible to litigate in New Jersey under the New Jersey Constitution.
You said you've got other community association cases that are pending?
Yeah, there are some things hanging around.
They're all
kind. It's a second Galaxy Towers case.
A second one?
Yeah, that's on hold. The first Galaxy Towers case had to do with the outsiders, the community people who wanted to come into Galaxy Towers to give out literature in response to what the Condominium Association did. I now represent insiders within Galaxy Towers who want fair and open elections and free speech within the buildings. That's now been stayed pending the decision of in the Twin Rivers case.
So, that case kind of goes away when you win Twin Rivers.
I believe so, yeah.
And so any other ones?
Well, there are some other things hanging around. I got one guy who's faced, one of the guys who spoke at the conference was fined $40,000 for putting flyers under his neighbor's doors. They've rescinded that at the moment after I threatened to sue them, but they're threatening again to forbid him from giving out flyers, but we're waiting to see what happens with Twin Rivers.
And so, again, that one will go away. There's the one, and I can't remember the association. It's one of the original associations, and the guy said that they haven't had elections there.
Oh, you're talking about Radburn.
Radburn, yes.
Yeah, that's actually being handled by my friend Renee Steinhagen, and co-counsel is Renee Steinhagen from the New Jersey Appleseed Fund, and my colleague Bob Holmes at the Rutgers Law School community legal clinic. They're doing the Radburn case.
But
that'll probably be, we'll see what happens with Twin Rivers. That'll probably determine the outcome of Radburn also.
So again, you've got everything hinges on Twin Rivers.
Absolutely. And I'm hoping we're going to get a decision by the end of this week. I'm looking for Friday.
Really? That's soon?
Yeah, well, Chief Justice Zazali has to retire next Sunday, June 17th. And so my suspicion is the case will come down, along with his retirement. That's my guess. I could be wrong. It could be held over.
What's the best scenario? You win it. I mean, obviously, you win everything across the board. But some of the issues were settled, right, beforehand. You started off
Main thing in Twin Rivers is the big issues are, do they affirm the finding of the appellate division that it is a constitutional actor and that there is no waiver of rights? Those are the two issues that really matter. Then there's the question of, assuming that the state constitution's free speech provisions do apply under reasonable regulations, how reasonable are the Twin Rivers regulations? That's the minor issue. They could send it back to the trial court to, decide if they're reasonable or not. That's not all. The important thing is that they affirm that they are constitutional actors and that the Constitution applies to some extent and that the only issue is the reasonableness of the regulations.
Frank, we're out of time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with Twin Rivers.
Good talking to you.
Well, it was good meeting you, and give my love to Marilyn.
Okay.
And thanks to all of you for joining us.
Very good.
On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.